City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is show 163. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
Hello.
Hello.
So what do you like to see? Do you like the powdery, downy snow with just a little on the ground? Do you like the heavy, thick blankets of
I love the snow. Yeah. I really do like the snow. What I do
Did
not
Did you have
like...
snow when you were a kid?
No, not no. so much.
No.
I mean, we would have it occasionally, and when we did, it was... I remember having it, interestingly enough, when I was 10 or 11, somewhere between 9 and 11, we had snow during one of the major Winter Olympics.
Hmm.
And I remember playing in the snow, coming in and watching the Winter Olympics.
Very apropos.
And being off from school. I do remember that. You know, I love snow. I do not like rain. I could never live anywhere with it.
Really?
I like rain at night. I love to sleep with a rainstorm. But raining all day long really is just a
Doesn't
downer
for
me.
So do you have like little doggy boots for Nilla? Or how
no,
do you keep the snow?
No, she loves the snow. She's like, she should be running the Iditarod. I swear to God. She like loves a new snow more than, it brings her such
really?
Joy, a brand new fresh snow.
Plop, 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 plop.
Oh, she like literally last year when we had a snow, she walked outside and we got on the sidewalk. And at one point she just started running and then just slid like purposely like a kid through the snow. She loves to stuff her nose down into like snow that's not been messed up and like push through it, like burrow through it.
Wow.
She loves it. When it really snows, what I do is I put the extremely long leash on her that's probably like 15 or 20 feet long. It's like you'd lead a horse around a track with this leash. And I let her just... go. I just go, go Nilla, go. And right. she gets up where it's really deep into the yard as opposed to the sidewalk. And she just leaps in it like Pepe Le Pew. Do you remember how Pepe Le Pew used to like leap up? And it wears her out, which is great. And yeah. she loves it, you know.
Does she not like get snow all over the house? How does that work?
Oh, well, starting, even with the rain, you know, you got to have the towels right in the doorway, in the closet, so you can wipe her all down. But she loves it. And the snow's a lot less messy and worse than the rain. So a bad spring rain in April or May
is
can
be
lot
so
muddier.
Mucky and yeah.
A lot muddier and a lot worse to clean. But yeah, but she has, I cannot, it's the one time of year that I would love to let her in the backyard, and I can't because she loves it so much. She'd just stay out there playing. She would never, if I was like, Nilla, here, come. She would never.
She would turn into an icicle.
Yeah. I mean, every now and again, sometimes it'll pad up in her, like it'll smash up in her little paws and she'll hold one of her paws up, but it doesn't really stop her. You know, I had other dogs who they would just cry, like they hated their feet being cold, but she just kind of lifts one up and still burrowing through it, you know? She loves it. I'm telling you, she looks like that. I saw that 8 Mile movie. Mm-hmm. You remember that 8 Mile movie? It came out like last year, the year before, about the dog sled and...
Yeah.
It was a Disney movie.
I didn't see it,
yeah, it totally reminds me of my dog. Like, she's not a husky, but she has those pointy ears and she looks like that.
She does it too,
can
yeah.
totally lay in the snow.
My cats are cold averse, obviously.
Yeah, they like no the hair. Blankets and the heat. You got they have do. A heating pad on the bed.
Yep. They're buried. The minute you get in bed, they find the crotch. That's really what they like.
Ooh.
Yeah, absolutely. They do. It's delicious.
Little gay boys?
Hey, I think so. Well, they're not really boys anymore. They're sort of eunuchs.
No.
I have a tip for folks that, you know, I don't knock iTunes because I think the iTunes has a magic catalog of delicious and wonderful music far and wide. But actually now at walmart.com and at amazon.com, you can buy music that is DRM free. You actually download just the MP3s.
Oh, you're kidding.
And
at where?
Either at Walmart online or at Amazon online.
Well, do we like Walmart?
Well, here's the thing.
Does
the
it
record,
cost?
A record,
they're free.
No, you have to buy them. They're a little bit cheaper than iTunes. But here's the thing: if you don't like Walmart, you don't like the record labels. And if you don't like the record labels, you just, you got a fundamental problem with purchasing music, right? It's
the same. You could go to Amazon if you have the choice.
No. But the record labels, BMG, Time Warner, yep, they're just as evil as Walmart. Let's be real here. They're not, Walmart is not scot-free in what it's doing, and neither are those big labels. So,
right,
you know, they all have issues. But Amazon also does offer it. Jeff Bezos, gotta love him. He's been an innovator. But they do offer a really great selection. If you've ever seen in iTunes when it says album only, you've ever seen those things?
Yeah.
I could not find a single one on Amazon that was album only.
Oh, wow.
Everything was completely open. In fact, some album only tracks, I went over to Amazon and found them completely. You could just buy that one track.
Look at that.
So that was super handy. So that's my tip for Christmas time, maybe.
Yeah.
That's me.
I'm sitting here, speaking of Christmas time, looking at your massive, how big is yours? How big is your show-off computer that you know, here I am talking about getting a computer and you beat me to the punch.
I did.
Because I'm lazy.
I needed it.
Your new iMac is so sexy.
Gorgeous.
It really, I want to hump it.
Ginormous 24 inch.
I might ruin it though, but I really want to dry hump it and I might get a little wet because it's just that sexy.
I think I tweeted a couple weeks ago, like, if I could marry my iMac, I probably would.
I'm telling you, you're watching porn on that?
Yeah.
How is that?
Good.
Yeah.
It's almost like the Doinks are life-size.
Do you pretend that like your microphone is really just a...
No.
No.
I did have a video chat with Wanda Wisdom the other day, though.
We
had a little video conference. Because
you have a camera right up in the top, right?
Yeah, there's a camera right there. So Wanda and I, we were chatting on the internets with each other. It was delightful.
Look at that.
I showed her mine. She showed me hers.
Ooh.
Microphone. But it was nice to have that capability. I don't really... I don't do the video chat. Although I've just discovered that there's a lot of people who don't mind you watching them.
I'm sure they don't.
They don't need to watch you. They just don't mind you watching them. So it's quite interesting.
The exhibitionists of the world. You know, it's interesting because when you think that people are watching you, you know, I had something happen this past week. It was just such a crazy time. But I was, and I don't think I've talked about this on the, I can't even remember. I've talked about it so much. So if I have, folks, you're having a deja vu moment and it must be important in your life. I got my credit card statement.
Yeah.
From my Discover card. And I know I spend a lot of money, but this was pretty crazy. And I thought, well, I did do this month and I did do this, but no. And for a second, I thought that somebody had stolen my number somehow in Toronto because it was so exorbitant when you and I were up there. And then I was like, I never really used a credit card.
They wouldn't take it anywhere up there.
Yeah, they wouldn't take it anywhere. So, but anyhow, somebody got my number and they were all PayPal charges. And they were all
you don't even have a PayPal
games,
account.
No, games, videos, this kind of thing. And obviously hacked in somewhere and stole my number.
Yikes.
And I had only in the week previous before they started charging, and it went on for 14, 15, 16 days. So they didn't catch it, which Discover can't believe they didn't catch it because normally
if it's
during the holidays
times,
especially if I'm like, I'm on the first floor of Macy's and then I go to the second floor of Macy's and then I go somewhere else outside
little,
of Macy's.
This is a customer service call.
Yeah, they won't take my card and they'll be like, I'm sorry, Ms. Matheny, you have to talk to this person. We have to call it in, you know, kind of thing. Because it seems like you're having strange activity.
Yep.
But they didn't find the strange activity. But it's really, really freaky to think that somebody got my information because any of the sites that I was on were, and I don't buy a lot of stuff online. I asked them if they thought it was, you know, some of my major bills. And they said no, because you've always done that kind of activity. But I was on one of the sites actually you just mentioned and another site getting one small item for Kelly. But it was a large site.
You can go ahead and say it because Amazon, I had a problem with Amazon as well.
Yeah. Well, I bought some stuff from Amazon. Yep. I spent like $7.99 and you know, and whoever stole my card spent like $3,900 in videos. And games. And so I don't know. I'm a little gun shy. I still bought some new stuff and I'm out shopping with my new card, but I love Discover because they have 100% fraud protections, and normally they would catch it, but it's the greatest card. I don't understand people that don't accept Discover. Makes no sense to me, but I love it.
Yeah, it's sort of it's always been the third wheel, though, I think,
I love it. I love it.
Or the fourth wheel, actually.
It's a good card, and it pays you back. And
Amex for business, Visa, MasterCard for regular, and then there's Discover came on the scene.
Yeah, I like the fees on Amex, but there you go.
you know,
to the businesses.
It's just the interesting. So what are you planning on doing in December? Do you have anything fun on the agenda?
Have so many fun things. Well, I'm going to a friend's this weekend to a party that they do annually. They normally adopt a family, but this year they're doing Toys for Tots. So I've already gone out and toy shopped, which I enjoy doing very much because I don't have little kids in my life. But I do love the choice department at Target. I like to go and Target buy. Yeah, it's fun. And, I'm going to another holiday party this weekend and I've been seeing some theater. I'm going to continue to see some more, theater and, you know, I just, decorating the house, which I just finished doing. Aww. And, I haven't decorated the outside cause I've been too cold.
Right.
The inside is looking lovely.
And take Nil out, let her romp while you decorate.
Yeah, exactly.
Tie it to your waist.
So it's all good. How about you? You're just doing the show. And...
You know, I'm just doing the show, but Hanukkah is, has already begun by the time you guys are listening to the show. So we're, happy holidays to, all the people of the Jewish faith who are listening.
Absolutely.
A prosperous new year. And all that good stuff, all the good holidays.
That's not their high holiday like it is for us. That's
But it is a big holiday.
It is a
in the spectrum of things. So, I'm taking this time to really just look back and figure out what happened in the year and what's going on. And my weekends are pretty busy now with the show. But I have to tell you, in guitar class the other day, this is so
one time
fantastic.
In band camp.
This one time in guitar class, we played "Hungry Like a Wolf."
You did not.
We did.
You
have I have the guitar tabs for "Hungry." Like it was awesome.
You have to teach me.
Yeah,
and I realized now after one class,
bizarre the words to that song are.
Oh, it's
smells like a sound. Some that hound. I'm in the
all their songs
after you.
Are bizarro. Yeah, I don't know what they were smoking, but they're back out. You know, with the new album.
Do you know where they're named after?
I have no idea.
You remember the movie Barbarella?
Yes.
Dr. Duran Duran. Oh, that's where they got the name from.
I loved Duran Duran so much when I was growing up. They were my band. They were the only band. They were the band. And I had a wall of Tiger Beat, Teen Beat, any of those poppy magazines with all their pictures taped to one another. Now, they all look like lesbians. I mean, Nick Rhodes could not have looked more like a lesbian, nor could have.
John
Taylor, I thought, was so beautiful. Simon Le Bon, of course. Roger Taylor, no relation to John Taylor, little factoid. But I loved them so much, and I would plaster them all over my wall, all taped to each other.
Duran collages.
I had a collage, but the interesting thing about my collage was it was all taped at the top where the ceiling met the wall, but you could pull the entire collage off the wall because my mother wouldn't let me put tons of tape on the on the wall. So
free hanging collage.
Yep. And then I sold it off like picture by picture to the younger generation below me, being the capitalist that I was.
Girl.
I had posters. I loved them so much. And one of my biggest childhood fights, which I don't know if I probably need to go apologize for this now that I'm an adult. But one of my biggest childhood fights was I was really upset with a friend of mine because she didn't invite me to Duran Duran because she had to know. I mean, everybody knew how much I loved them, and she invited another friend. And I was livid and devastated.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. How depressing.
It was so sad.
You know, and things like that, they just stick with you for a few years when you're a child. You're like, I'm never going to
talk to her. It stayed with me all the way through high school. It stayed with me. There. And this was like in, seventh grade, so.
I love, every time I see a Patrick Nagel painting, I think of Duran Duran and the cover of Rio, because it all flows into the continuum. And my sister has a lot of Patrick Nagels hanging in her house.
Oh, really?
Still, it's like a time warp in there.
Girl.
I know. She's slowly phasing them out.
Frame Factory.
You see my pictures.
I know.
You know I'm not bad with the camera.
I know you're awesome. Maybe you need to give her some pictures.
She's not kind of having it.
That's what you need to give her.
But she likes the Nagels. So I keep wanting to say, girl, you got to move forward. Oh, yeah, but they're going to be worth something someday. Yeah, but the 80s aren't back yet. You got to move forward. Yeah. So
we got about another 5 more years. And then the 80s are deeply footed back in them. So she's probably right. She probably can hang around for about 5 more years. And
it's tragic. And it's in the 2000s, she should have taken them down.
Duran.
Doesn't that just make you happy?
And the Reflex. Like, what the hell are these songs about? Mm-hmm. I can't
quite tell you.
Her name was Rio. And she dances on the sand. Like, what are these songs? I don't even know what they mean, but I just loved them.
I just loved them. They were good touchstones.
They were so pretty, and they wore mascara well.
Yeah. But I think after the turn of the year,
like girls.
Right. I have all this theater lined up that I want to see. And of course, I'm doing a show now. I can't see it. But there's all this theater that's coming that I want to see. So, falls into.
Yeah, the biggest thing that I'm really looking forward to this holiday season, it's only playing for a handful of days here in the city of Chicago. You know her possibly from Kissing Jessica Stein mm-hmm. or Walk on the Moon. She's been in so many great films. Tova Feldshuh on the show today, who will be portraying Katharine Hepburn in a one-woman mm-hmm. show called Tea at Five, playing at the North Shore Center. I'm so excited about this. And they are doing a gay night, which I love.
Yeah.
Speaking of girl, boy, boy, girl, I mean, Katharine Hepburn, kind of the consummate boys love her, girls love her, straight and gay. Yep. They either identify with her or love her or attracted to her or all of the above.
All the above.
And Tova is somebody that I have admired for a really long time. So I'm so thrilled to sit down and talk with her about this role and about her career. Because her career has definitely been had a foot into gender and sexuality yeah. being issues in a lot of the roles that she's played. So Tova Feldshuh on the show first for us here on the Windy City Queercast, and for me and for my career, I've never spoken to Tova. So Tova Feldshuh, love her. Plus we have news, we have mm-hmm. entertainment and much, much more. So this is a good one, folks. Yeah. You're going to want to keep this one in your ear.
Find out what happened before Dorothy dropped in at Wicked, Chicago's newest smash hit musical, and the untold story of the Witches of Oz.
Popular, I know about popular.
Popular, USA Today calls Wicked a triumph. And Time magazine writes, if every musical had the brain, the heart, and the courage of Wicked, Broadway really would be a magical place. Now, this Grammy Award-winning blockbuster has cast its spell over Chicago. Wicked, at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater.
And nobody in all of Oz, no wizard that there is or was, is ever gonna bring me.
Call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com today. Because the longer you wait, the longer you'll wait to see Wicked.
Art. Performance.
Provocative. Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative. Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of December 3rd, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
It's a new blue holiday tradition when diva extraordinaire Amy Armstrong returns with Freddie Allen on piano in How the Diva Stole Christmas 2 at the Lakeshore Theater at the corner of Broadway and Belmont. How the Diva Stole Christmas 2 is for 7 performances only, December 7th and 23rd. Tickets are only $25. Call 773-472-3492 or visit lakeshoretheater.com.
The all-male comedic ballet company Le Ballet Trocadero de Monte Carlo, or the Trokes, as they are affectionately called by ballet enthusiasts around the world, appear one night only at the Harris Theater in Millennium Park on January 17th. This hilarious troupe performs a fabulous evening of high art and satire. Tickets for the Trokes are the perfect gift for all of the divas, prima ballerinas, and darlings on your holiday list. Call 312-334-7777 or visit harristheaterchicago.org today.
Are you depressed, repressed, undressed? Court Theater has the cure. Court Theater has the cure. They will have you feeling better in no time with gay playwright Joe Orton's sexy and ferociously playful farce, What the Butler Saw. Sean Graney directs the provocative comedy now playing through December 9th. For tickets to What the Butler Saw, visit courttheater.org.
Don't miss the musical event of the season, Ella, playing at Northlight Theater through January 6th. Set your feet tapping with Ella, the swinging new musical about jazz legend Ella Fitzgerald, featuring memories from her extraordinary life and more than 20 of her greatest hits. For information or tickets to Ella, visit northlight.org.
Four-time Tony Award-nominated actress Tova Feldshuh plays the legendary Katharine Hepburn in the Chicago premiere of Tea at Five, playing December 19th through 23rd at the North Shore Center for Performing Arts, with a special gay night December 20th, where you can meet Tova after the show. For tickets to Tea at Five, call 847-673-6300 or order online at northshorecenter.org.
Remy Bumpo Theater Company presents Philip Barry's sparkling comedy of manners, The Philadelphia Story. Don't miss this staging of the beloved Katharine Hepburn film classic, The Philadelphia Story, playing now through January 6th at the Victory Gardens Greenhouse Theater, 2257 North Lincoln Avenue. For tickets and info, call 773-871-3000 or visit remybumpo.org.
Altar Boys is a hilarious, wholly inspiring musical comedy about five small-town boys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, Juan, and Abraham,
them trying to save the world one screaming fan at a time. The Tribune says this production is brilliant. You'll laugh your socks off. Altar Boys is playing now at the Drury Lane Water Tower Theater. Visit alterboyschicago.com.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Perhaps fashion's greatest mystery. What makes a big, strong man say, I think I need a new fur coat?
I don't know.
The very height of political incorrectness. Nothing says, I could give a rat's rear end like a man in a floor-length chinchilla.
I'm taking no prisoners.
A look that's half street pimp, half Aunt Esther, and full-on fur-tastic. Sure, it's gauche, but you don't spend more on your coat than your car, not to be noticed.
But look at me.
So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer, because it takes a real man to wear a lady's coat.
Mr. Male Fur Coat Wearer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
An Oklahoma man police describe as a white supremacist was recently arrested for the October murder of a gay man, Stephen Domer. Police believe the murder was part of a gang initiation. Daryl Lynn Madden, age 37, is already facing charges in connection with the murder of his friend.
Singapore, which recently banned an Xbox video game for featuring a human alien lesbian sex scene, is that really sex? Unbanned Mass Effect after implementing a rating system. The game received an adult rating and is now for sale. Singapore has banned a number of games for their content.
CNN says a retired military officer and openly gay man shouldn't have been allowed to ask GOP candidates his question regarding the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy during the recent CNN-YouTube Republican debate. Keith H. Kerr should not have been given airtime because he has ties to Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. He serves as co-chair of Clinton's National Military Veterans Group.
A new Canadian study of men points to a biological cause for sexual orientation. The new data indicates that gay and bi men have, quote, an elevated incidence of extreme right-handedness. Previous studies have shown gays and lesbians more likely than heterosexuals are left-handed.
Okay. Two transgender human rights campaign members in a joint letter announced their resignation from the organization's business council, citing HRC's, quote, broken promises, the lack of credibility that HRC has with the transgender community at large, and HRC's apparent lack of commitment to healing the breach it has caused, the letter said. Jameson Green and Donna Rose wrote that they find it, quote, impossible to maintain an effective working relationship with HRC.
28 retired high-ranking military leaders signed onto a letter calling for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell on the 14th anniversary of its signing. This is the largest number of former military leaders to voice their opposition of the anti-gay policy at one time.
The Academy of Television Arts and Sciences and TV Cares presented a Ribbon of Hope Special Achievement Award to the In the Life on World AIDS Day. In the Life is a 15-year documentary series that focuses on LGBT issues and has been nominated for an Emmy Award 3 times.
During an interview with CNN's Larry King, former entertainer Wayne Newton lashed out against the late-night talk show host Johnny Carson, calling him, quote, mean-spirited for cracking gay jokes and questioning his masculinity over the years. Newton said he tried to confront Carson about it and even threatened him with physical violence. Well, that's the way to get it solved. He hasn't been on television in a long, long time.
Yeah, let that
let
go.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Absolutely. And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Hello, pineapples. I'm Miss Fousey, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast. I love them.
It's a big gay contest, and you could win. All you have to do is enter. Top prize, American Airline tickets for two, good for travel in the U.S. 48, Bermuda, Bahamas, Mexico, Canada, or the Caribbean. Second prize, VIP theater package to Altar Boys with t-shirts and a meet and greet for you and 3 friends. And third place, a CD extravaganza of great recording artists. To enter, just email promotions@windycitymediagroup.com and list your top 3 gay entertainers of all time and include your name and phone number. In the subject of the email, put the word contest. That's it. Join our year-end big gay contest. You might be a winner.
Drawing to be held January 1st, 2008 by random drawing. Winners will be notified.
Tea at Five is the one-woman show about the life of Katharine Hepburn, making its Chicago premiere this December. Starring as the tomboy icon, the fiery beauty who led it independent life unapologetically, is four-time Tony Award nominee Tova Feldshuh, who movie fans may remember from her powerful and honest work in Kissing Jessica Stein. Hey, Tova, how are you?
I'm great, Amy, and thank you. Happy to be talking to you.
Oh, it's so great. I am a huge mega fan of yours, I have to tell you. It's going to come out in this interview. We've spoken before this interview, but it has not come out the breadth. So I'm thrilled to be talking with you. To focus on the play a little bit, what particular time in Hepburn's life, which was a vast life with, I guess, a lot of different stories that could be told, does Tea at Five focus on?
Tea at Five... displays her life, but it begins with her at 76 years old and then goes back to her at 31 years old, right on the stage. It's without an act break. I've got two quick changes. It goes 76, 31, 76.
Wow.
And I'm very excited to do it that way. I have a wonderful, wonderful playwright, Matt Lombardo, who wrote this piece, and this piece has debuted in many, many important cities around the United States. And yet he is still willing to success, incidentally. He's still willing to work on it, change it, tweak it, adjust it to all the research I've been doing about Hepburn and some of the adjustments I feel very strongly about. And he's been extremely kind and accommodating to what I believe are my perceptions of this woman, which will, of course, grow and I hope deepen as time goes on. But I've certainly kicked off my research with great diligence.
So well, you must have to kind of go into a vacuum of obsession. What has been the biggest surprise that you've discovered about her or the things you just weren't aware of?
Well, the thing, one of the biggest surprise about her in relationship to my own sensibility is that she makes me cry. So I say to myself, why does she make me cry? Well, one of the reasons she makes me cry is because she is the prototype of American nobility. It's how we want to talk. It's the thin waist we want to have. It's the breeding and the grace that she has in her from her beginnings. And it's her tremendous relationship with all this breeding. She has a tremendous unequivocal relationship with the earth, with gardening, with having dirty fingernails, with the manliness with inside her woman's heart, let us say. She's a very at-home girl-boy or boy-girl. She's very at home being a tomboy. She was friends with her father. She was heavily influenced by her mother, was a suffragette, but she was inseparable from her older brother, Tom, who would commit suicide at a very tender age. When he was, I believe, 15 and she was 13. She left her birthday at that time, which was in May, and she took on Tom's birthday, which was November 8th. And she wore his clothes, and she cut her hair, and she tried to be both son and daughter to her bereft, stoic, elegant, brilliant parents. And she makes me cry. She's a very brave woman, and she really in many respects never disappoints. When you get down to her real human values and her actions for other people, they really are without question noble. Her behavior around Spencer Tracy was unbelievable. It was just unbelievable. It was 27 years of devotion, and as Louise Tracy, Spencer's wife, whom he never divorced because he was a Catholic, said to her, I was his wife. You were just a rumor. She never attended the funeral, so as not to embarrass Louise Tracy. And when she spoke on television after Louise's death, she said, you know, she was caught between such a hard place, Louise Tracy. After all, to be respectable, and she had Spencer's children, and one of whom was deaf. And they founded this whole Deaf Institute. And she said, you know, Mrs. Tracy really needed to be Mrs. Tracy in order to do all her good work and get the Institute funded and built. You know, she said, I didn't need the moniker of Mrs. Spencer Tracy, but Louise really needed it for her own sense of respectability and ability to carry forth her higher purpose. So I would never take it from her.
What do you think was the love line or the lifeline between Tracy and Hepburn?
Well, part of it was the unattainable. You know, it was so essential to Katharine Hepburn to be independent, so essential for her to be an independent woman. I remember I had a beau before I married my own husband, and I met his parents, And my beloved mother has always said, always go to their home. Always study the parents. See how you feel around the parents, because the mate turns into one of the parents. And I remember being with this boyfriend. It was 1974, and I would not meet my husband until 1976. And this boyfriend's mother said, "What do you want to do, Tova?" I said, "Oh, I want to be an actress. I want to be a great artist." And she said, "Well, don't you want to have children?" I said, "Oh, no, not now. Much, much later." She said, "Oh, that would be very selfish not to have children." It was so interesting to me, and it probably would have been a selfish thing at 24. But I remember distinctly, I said, this boy is going to be a noose around my neck, maybe. And that's how he turned out to be, and we parted company on February 16th, 1976, which was the very day my husband came back to my dressing room to see me in Yentl. I was playing an Orthodox Jewish boy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I always say from the front I look like Lillian Gish, from the back I look like Larry Tisch.
Well, you played Yentl on Broadway before Streisand played Yentl. Did everybody just fall in love with you during that show? I mean, men and women
of,
and
it was a lot of fun. I've made a very good career. Oh, here's my beloved husband right now. Hi, honey. I'm just giving an interview. I've made some wonderful career choices in playing trouser parts, and that was one of the biggest breaks of my career. It was the first one that put me on a marquee, and it was a little girl who sacrificed her feminine identity in order to become a scholar, basically in order to follow her dream in life, which was to be scholarly, and all those wonderful books, not to mention the Kabbalah, which was the underbelly of Jewish philosophical thought, were utterly forbidden to womankind. So
yeah.
She had to parade around as a boy, and there's a saying in the Talmud that if you don the clothes of the other sex, does the soul become perplexed? And that was those were all these big questions that would be asked of me, and it was my first break with the gay community. It was, lucky. I don't think there's a decent career built in the United States without the support of the gay community.
Right.
And I know that Ms. Streisand feels that way in spades. I mean, they're a very, very important element in the artistry of the United States, or of any great democracy, really.
We'll talk about playing the qualities you talk about in the character of Yentl are the similar qualities we were just discussing in Katharine Hepburn. And there's been much claim about whether or not did she sleep with women? Was she bisexual? I mean, how far did she take kind of this masculine sense of self?
She did not sleep with women per se. That's my guts. On the other hand, she had a very close alliance and a love for Laura Harding. Whether they made love or not, I don't know. Whether they slept in the same bed, if that was what was wanted and needed in a hotel room, I don't think Hepburn would have made a second thought of whether to climb into a queen size bed with someone of the same sex.
Right.
You know what I mean? And,
yeah.
I mean, how many? We've all slept with our girlfriends or our whatever. I don't know what her sexual practices were, but I do know that she had wonderful, close, and abiding feelings for Laura Harding that last the rest of their lives, and they were in many respects inseparable. And she talked about in me being accused, as she said, of being a lesbian. Oh, they thought we were lesbians. It didn't make our beaux very happy. So I don't know what the deal is. Did she ever kiss a girl? I don't know. I know I did for 10 months in public on Broadway, in front of 1,000 people a night, Yentl did. I did, and now these things are like a hiccup. When I was brought up, oh my gracious goodness, it was a much bigger deal.
Yeah. One hopes she did. I hope she did at least once. So just because I think she would have, just because she was Hepburn, and why wouldn't she want to experience that? She seemed to want to experience so much of life in an authentic way,
If she had the impulse, I don't think that she would have stopped herself.
Yeah.
She really was, honestly, I think appropriately, not inappropriately, appropriately entitled. I'm going to play Tallulah Bankhead in 2008 as well, who was definitely was a practiced bisexual. She had women lovers. And now that woman was wild and in many respects really debauched, and that doesn't have anything to do with her sexuality. It has to do with her use of drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
But Hepburn was highly disciplined, was a cold shower in the morning girl. You know, she took freezing baths and she swam almost every day of her life. Rain or shine, a freezing water or not, it didn't bother her a bit. So she thought very well of herself, and she came from a home where you had to be an independent thinker. That was very, very prized. What you felt and what you thought was extremely important in the Hepburn family. And the mother was a suffragette.
Yeah.
And the father did work on venereal disease in men, and the mother did work on making sure that men had prophylactics so that they didn't disease women. There's a story in Matt's play about a husband getting gonorrhea, venereal disease, from a hooker the night before he got married and transmitting that to his wife, or maybe something more serious, and she got pregnant with their child and she lost her life and the life of the baby because of this and never knew why she died. I mean, the injustice, it just makes you sick.
Yeah.
And there is hearsay that a similar fate befell Spencer Tracy, which is why the child is deaf.
Right.
That he, in fact, was infected and infected Louise. And
oh, yeah.
Baby. But I don't know. I mean, it's all, that's really dark stuff. But back to Hepburn and her adventuresome, comfortable with herself, independent thinking and often trousered life. I mean, you know, she wore slacks because they were comfortable,
right,
and they fit her stride, and she wanted to sit any old way she wanted to sit.
Yeah.
And still be a creature of fascination and nothing vulgar. She really was not vulgar.
You know what I love is I have TiVo, which people who listen to this know because I talk about it, how it has a brain more than I do. So it tells me these things I might want to watch sometimes.
Wow.
And one night I came home and it had taped this 2-part series of an old Dick Cavett interview with her.
Fabulous.
And it is fabulous. Like, she took her shoes off. She's got her feet up on the coffee table. And I love how at home she is with herself. And she's just, you know, there's just such a real authentic quality about her. And you know, you have a real tradition. You mentioned Tallulah Bankhead, which is this one woman show that you've created that you're going to be doing. You also played another real woman in Golda's Balcony about the late Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir. And that show set a record, the longest running one woman play in Broadway history, which is,
yeah,
is enormous.
And you know what the surprise is about her? I mean, she was a practicing heterosexual, but she had 5 lovers. Now, how about them, Apple?
There you go.
How about Eros and power? Interesting, huh? And she wasn't a beautiful woman. She was clearly attracted men all the time.
Yeah.
Far out, huh?
That doesn't surprise me, though. Powerful, powerful lady. But what is the challenge in playing real rather than playing fictional women? Do you feel more... I mean, obviously, you do the research, but do you feel any more gravitas in playing someone like a Tallulah Bankhead, like Golda Meir, more Katharine Hepburn?
They're wonderful questions. First of all, I did write a piece on Tallulah called Tallulah Hallelujah that I love and I'm very proud of. It takes place in front of the USO when Ella Fitzgerald can't show up, and it's just, and so Tallulah has to punt. She has to
right.
improvise. But in fact, I'm going to be doing a piece, I believe, called Looped that Matthew also wrote.
Oh, wow.
And about the true story of Tallulah Bankhead having to loop 3 or 4 lines of a movie where the sound wasn't good and they had to go into a studio, you know, to redo the sound, which we often have to do, particularly on takes that are done out exteriors outside. So she comes into the studio to loop her, let's say, 4 lines, and instead of taking 15 minutes, it takes 4.5 hours. And the play is about that because she's so looped herself. She's so flying high. And that's a four-hander. That's myself interacting with the sound technician. It's just a scream. In all events, let me see. What was your question now about?
No, I was just asking about playing. Do you feel like it's there's
about the obligation of gravitas? Whomever you play, fictional or not, I actually prefer non-fictional. I'll tell you in a minute why. You have to advocate for them.
Mm.
In other words, it's very important in the writing of Tea at Five. We're just changing a line because of Blessed Matthew. He's so wonderful, and the line is: one minute I was on the Sabre Causeway. And the next minute, some nurse was taking a scissors to my Prada slacks. And I said, Matthew, she'd never say Prada, ever, 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 ever. She would never put anybody else down by flaunting her designer make.
Yeah.
She would never have to heighten her own sense of stature by showing off that way. And he, of course, said, you're right.
Hmm.
Well, he had a he was writing from another point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But as her playwright, as her muse, you have to get in her and advocate for her, just like if we were writing a one-person play about Hitler, we wouldn't make him bad. We'd make him the best cleaning woman on the planet Earth. He's just a great scourer and cleaner. He's the great cleaning lady, except he got rid of homosexuals, Jews, communists, anybody who wasn't like him.
Right.
Or he deemed.
Hmm.
So, but you advocate for the character. You have to advocate for the characters. You're in their bones, in their skin. They're talking about themselves.
You know, you have this enormous gift at being, you just said it beautifully, like in their bones, in their skin. I mean, my word was going to be just clearly transparent, if that's not too much of a double positive, double negative, I don't know, redundant, in film. I just think you are so transparent in film, and it is a huge gift, and it is a very difficult thing to do because it has to look so easy to be able to see inside you. And in your performance in Kissing Jessica Stein, I truly think many people that I may know may not have known much about the world of theater, had not heard of you, but you just radiated off the screen in that film, and especially in that scene where you're telling your daughter to just let go and fall for the girl, like just to take the leap. What kind of response did you get from fans of that
movie?
That
was a big response. I think my favorite call ever was from Barbara Streisand herself, that she had just seen the film and how much she loved my work, and she needed to call to tell me. I said, she needed to call to tell me? How'd she even get my phone number? You know, I said, you know, even though she's Barbara Streisand, I said, I thought that was an incredible thing to take time out of your day
yeah.
and call a practical stranger. I mean,
yeah.
we were connected through Yentl, but we were nothing more than acquaintances.
Yeah.
And tell somebody you believe in them, how kind-hearted that was.
Oh, it's such an extraordinary performance, though. I'm amazed that everybody that knew you had passed you, had ever met you, wouldn't call you if they'd had access to you.
Well, I enjoyed the whole trip of that. I loved getting that movie. I love doing it. I loved the writers. I'm still friendly, very friendly with both girls. And, got a lot of friends in the gay community, of course, mm-hmm. across the boards, but particularly the gay women's community, which brings me to Rosie O'Donnell, with whom I had the pleasure of sharing Cheetah Rivera's act last night. We're both watching the brilliant,
yeah.
extraordinary, very well-preserved and utterly capable Cheetah Rivera.
I've met Cheetah Rivera. I gave her a piece of carrot cake on the street that I just bought after the night after I saw her in Kiss of the Spider Woman. And she took it from me. She was so sweet. She didn't think I was a freak. I was like, would you like a piece of cake? Oh, she is lovely.
She's a darling. She's not too big for her britches. And I have a real soft spot in my heart for Rosie. Rosie was there completely unadorned with Kelly and talking about getting chubby. It was so fun, so cute. And I'm going to London. I'm opening June 7th in London at the Shaw Theater in Golders Balcony. And
oh,
Rosie
great.
Is coming to opening night, press
oh.
night. At least she said, she didn't, you know, she said, I'll be there. Tell me when. I said, June 10th. And she said, oh, my gosh, it's one of my kids' birthdays. I said, forget it. We'll change. So we had a meeting with the producers today, and they said, and press night will be June the 12th. I said, I knew it. You know, you don't
there
even have to
go.
Ask for a change. Rosie's in touch with the gods.
That's right.
So I'm hoping she, in fact, will be able to fly over. But what a doll she is. She was talking about the women's movement, and it made me think of all the wonderful, lucky roles I've been able to play.
Well, you really have. I mean, one of my favorite films is A Walk on the Moon. It is absolutely, to me, one of the most perfect, simple, lovely, truthful films. And it doesn't hurt that I'm totally hot for Diane Lane or Viggo Mortensen. He actually makes me a little ungay. But you were just so good in this film. And it was Tony Goldwyn's debut, right, as a director?
He was great. I based the character on my Aunt Nancy, one of my mother's sisters, all those girls. I myself never went to a bungalow colony in the Catskills, but I certainly heard of them, saw them. Other mm-hmm. people did. And my mother, of course, did in her childhood. Pardon me, not in mine, but never mind. I based it on one of my family members, and that Penny, the hook went deep in that one. It really went deep.
It seemed to for everyone. It really, really seemed to. It just seemed like a rare movie experience watching it, and sometimes right. that does leap off the screen.
It was wonderful to do it.
Who was your idol growing up in films or on stage that inspired you and made you think, this is what I want to do with my life, that's who I want to be?
Well, my first title was My Father, and it's interesting how Kate speaks about her parents and her desire to please her father, and in a way, interesting, though I am in a very, very successful marriage, her mother wanted to run for Senate, you know, and her father said, well, when do I get the divorce papers ready? So that was the end of her mother's political career, and I don't think Kate ever forgot it.
Mm.
So it was interesting that Kate didn't choose to marry for anybody at the time. She married Ludlow Ogden Smith for a little while, and they got divorced. But anyway, what was your wonderful question I'm babbling on?
Who was your idol? You were saying your father was first stage or film.
Oh, so extrapolating from my father being one of my great idols in my childhood, I then went on, besides applying to the Harvard Law School, and fortunately I won a McKnight Fellowship in acting, so I wasn't going to be doomed to the life of a lawyer and instead would play one on Law and Order and marry a Harvard lawyer instead. God bless him, just came in. I went from idolizing my father to idolizing his idols. And one of them was Winston Churchill, Felix Frankfurter, which would then become Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz taught my husband at Harvard. Then he taught our son at Harvard. And then I sang the national anthem at a big thing in Cipriani 2 weeks ago. Why? Why did I say yes? Because Alan Dershowitz was the speaker, and I got to be with him and part of the VIP thing. So my idols were political and law professorial types. And finally, in acting itself, gee whiz, of course, as a child, the icons have gone with the wind. I always felt I looked like Vivian Leigh. Oh, dream on, Tova, dream on. And I always loved the work in the theater of an actress named Irene Wirth, who was a great, great, great stage actress here and would win the Tony. The first time I was nominated was 75, 76. I was nominated with Lynn Redgrave, Irene Wirth, and Rosemary Harris.
Wow.
And then this unpronounceable little kid playing an Orthodox Jewish boy. Anyway, Irene Wirth would win for Sweet Bird of Youth, which she did opposite Christopher Walken, and it was just the most most brilliant thing I'd ever seen. Anybody whose work is brilliant, I am moved by it. I'm moved by Kevin Spacey's work in film. I am moved by certain things Annette Bening has done. Mm-hmm. I'm moved by the early work of Meryl Streep. I'm moved very much by the early work of Robert De Niro. All that very heavy transformational work, whether it was in Godfather or in Raging Bull, things like that, that were just so astonishing. I'm moved by the work of George Clooney, not as an actor. He's a good actor, but he's a great producer.
Yeah.
People love him. He gathers people around him. When you look at Michael Clayton, this new movie he's done, it's almost perfect. It's just so good. It's so good. I'm moved by original thought. Julian Schnabel has done this brilliant piece called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly about a man having a stroke, and he takes the camera starts all off focus, and you think it's your eyes that are failing you until you realize that the camera's inside the head of the man as he's having the stroke.
Oh, wow.
It was astonishing. It was just so astonishing. So if it's new work that is innovative and incisive and gives me a new way to perceive our life and how we want to conduct ourselves. I'm ever grateful to the artist for that. I mean, it's like the power of a still life. When you go and you see a great still life in a museum, it's not just that it's an apple. It's that if it is well done, it gives you the universality of appleness. Mm-hmm. You see an apple as you've never seen it before. You can almost smell it off the canvas. You see the light hit it the way you never see it hit in your refrigerator when you're just passing it by amongst all the other apples. So you perceive and take in appleness, and then the apple becomes the apple that was bitten by Adam and Eve before the expulsion. The apple becomes the Adam's apple of your very throat that's able to swallow and keep you alive and separate air from water, from sound. So that's the greatness of art, is when it pierces into the river of common human experience, common human behavior, and we can start to roll our own experiences upon us, which brings me to Hepburn. in the hope of getting down there in the possibilities of entitlement of the human spirit, which would involve the possibility of bisexuality, would involve the possibility of tremendously independent, innovative thought. You know, she was one of the first people to procure property for herself. It was very early in the game. Her entire career had fallen apart. She was having a love affair with Howard Hughes. I think the love affair ended, but they were still great friends. She would star in the Philadelphia Story in New York, and before it opened, Howard Hughes said, "I am buying you these film rights and giving it to you," and he bought the film rights for her. They were her film rights. She told no one about it, but she knew that other actors would want to get this part, and this way she would be insured to keep it. And so she did. Louis B. Mayer asked her to do the Philadelphia Story, and she delivered herself and the what? And the property for what? For $250,000. How many years ago? 60 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of scratch.
Well, you know I really hope that people will be able to come out and check this show out, because it's only playing for a short time here in Chicago. And you know what's amazing?
I think just seven performances.
Yeah, it's December 19th through the 23rd, folks, at the North Shore Center. And I have to say that what's fantastic is we started this interview talking about, you know, this lifespan of Katharine Hepburn. And you played Hepburn before in The Amazing Howard Hughes, you know, getting to have this character and wear this character in some form or fashion. You know, you talk about Meryl Streep's early career. You talk about De Niro's early career, you know, early in your career. And now to have it again, to have an experience of an entire night with you alone on stage. You're so amazing at these one woman tour de force shows. So everyone, I hope you can go out and take your friends to see Tea at Five. It's playing 1 week only, December 19th through the 23rd at the North Shore Center.
And the 20th, there's December 20th is a very, very special night at the theater, I believe.
It is. It's a special gay night just for us on
That's
the 20th.
Right.
And you can hang out and talk with Tova after the show. This is all in Skokie, Illinois, but that's really just Chicago. For tickets, call the box office 847-673-6300. That's 847-673-6300, or visit northshorecenter.org, and we'll have it linked right on our site, folks. You can just click right on through. Tea at Five. Get your tickets now. It's a great thing to do during the holidays.
I'll be doing a talk that night too, Aim.
I know.
On December 20th. That'll be a lot of fun. Gay night. You got it, baby.
The cocktails with Tova.
You got it, baby.
All right. Thank you so much, Tova, and break a leg.
Thank you, Amy.
And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.